Right now, Davey D hanging out with you. Sitting in front of me is a legend. There would be no hip-hop if it wasn't for this guy. There wouldn't be a whole lot of us who get down and dirty with the funk. We're talking about the godfather of funk, the father of funk, the one and only George Clinton. How you doing, brother?
I've been D-flea, D-ticked. I got my rabies shot, and I'm ready to bury the bone.
I like that. You know, this is a sharp outfit. This is a sharp outfit. We came thinking that, you know, we had to get the whole get up, and now you flipped the script and came with the suit and tie.
I try to keep doing that. I try to keep flipping the script, reinventing, you know what I'm saying? We started out like this.
I remember.
It ain't no thing to make a detour back into the past and make it fresh all over again.
You know, one of the things that we've noticed is that a lot of people have been digging in the crates. On the hip-hop side, people, of course, always went to the early P-Funk and Parliament and all that. But then people have been going back to the old stuff, you know, when you was, like, doing the doo-wop and singing and all that. You know, how you feel about that? And why do you think your music has spanned, like, 40 years and people are still just discovering new stuff?
We got that doo-doo. We got that poop. No, man, you know, we have a lot of history over the years. We came through rock and roll era when it first got started, with Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis and all of that, Bo Diddley. We were there for all of that. We came right on through the doo-wop days of the Heartbeats and the Cadillacs, then right into Motown.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's a lot of education if you was paying attention. And with me, after seeing Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers do Why Do Fools Fall in Love and reach where they reached in such a short period of time, I was on a mission. Still on a mission. And so I have a collection of musics that combine all the eras. You know, it's got to be the doo-doo.
Well, we love the doo-doo. I'm not going to lie. The doo-doo is good. You know, stinky funk, you know.
That's what we're talking about. Hold your nose tape music.
Right. Before, let me tell people who are younger, when you make the gas face or the thizz face, that thizz face and that look comes from
ooh-wee.
That's the original look right there.
That's getting that. That's putting your foot up in it. You know what I'm saying? That's doing it till it stink. You know what I'm saying? And really, it's getting off. You know, be up for the downstroke. If you're down, get up for the downstroke.
We definitely hear you on that. You know, right now, people are still checking for you. You haven't lost a lick. A lot of people outside are, you know, like, enthusiastic. What do you think has made you be able to stay relevant, you know, and still in sync? Because I know you just did something with Shock G. You know, you're doing stuff with Snoop Dogg. You always seem to stay in.
Well, anytime anybody is out here, we all out here for the same thing. So we can swap endurance for current vibe. You know, when I hear parents say, that ain't no music, I hear old musicians say, that ain't music. That's the music I rush to. I don't care if it's hip-hop. It ain't no different than bop, bop, and do bop, and the bop, bam, boom. That's the way they sounded then. That's the way we sounded to our kid. So when I hear grown folks or older musicians saying they don't like it, that's the music I'm going to.
So what are you going for now? Is there a particular sound?
It's the hip-hop. I mean, it's going to always be what's going on and with our sound and our spin on it. You know, because it's all the same thing, but it's just they have a different spin on it, but it's still something that's went through before. So right now, when I hear Lil Wayne them and Eminem and Rihanna, and all of them, when I hear them, what they're doing, and okay, I got that. Right. But even the hip-hop, you know, the craziest, rudest hip-hop, if it's catching on, I'm going to have to keep my ears to it because they're communicating in another time and space. It ain't the same as ours.
You know, one of the questions that I've always wanted to ask is just looking at the pantheon of legendary musicians that are around. There's yourself, there's Sly Stone, and James Brown. That seems to be the holy trilogy for our generation. But when you look at people like the Princes and Rick James, what separates your funk, for example, from Prince's funk?
Not too much. I mean, Prince is like one of us, too. I mean, we were here before him, or James Brown here before us. I mean, funk has always been around, but we've been the practitioner of it out loud, you know, from Atomic Dog to Tear the Roof Off to Test, you know what I'm saying, Music for My Mother. We professed it, and I intended for it to be its own thing, because, see, we had rock and roll. It got changed all around, urban rock, new rock, soft rock, 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 and to the point we couldn't even be part of rock and roll. You know, so we said, well, we're going to keep funk, 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 and you got to deal with us if you're coming through this funk.
You know, one of the things you've always had this, always connected us to things beyond the earthly domain that we stand on. You know, the mothership connection. But there seems to be, you don't see as many artists do that anymore, but for us as black folks, that seems to be something deeply spiritual. And could you talk about that connection?
Well, I mean, whether we believe it or not, we have to look at it. This ain't the first place this happened at. And I think somebody put us here, something put us here, just like all religions believe. Something like that put us here, and it's, we're putting it someplace else. We're doing the same, seeding the planets all over the place. So the music is directly in rhythm with that stuff. Right. You know, the beat, the groove, when you hear say Psycho Alpha, Disco Beta, Bioaqua, Duloop, that's my interpretation. There's got to be some kind of way something can move through the molecules of things without getting messed up. Like going through water and not getting wet. There's something that can do that, you know. And funk is that rhythm. Funk is the DNA for hip-hop, techno, all other music that's around. You get some funk in there. And everybody got some funk somewhere.
You know, Ricky Vincent, who wrote the book History of Funk, a good friend of yours, yeah. You know, when I was younger.
Huru Maggot.
Huru Maggot, yeah. He used to tell me, he said, you know, hip-hop is funk. And I always thought it was soul. And then what he told me, something interesting. I want to get your take on it. He said, funk is something where everybody can be a part of, right? Soul is something where it's very exclusive. Just a small group of people can get in there. What's your take on it? And the fact that, you know, some people are now saying that, he always said, hip-hop is funk because it allows everybody to be a part.
Well, that's what it is, like the funkiest way you can make music, to take another record and put them together. That's funky. You know what I'm saying? So it's the basic of, look at Wu-Tang. Everybody had a whole multitude, just like P-Funk. All of them are stars, given a chance to put all their different stuff out. That's funky attitude, because most of them want a back singer on the back of a band and some side men. But when all the people in the neighborhood or that know you can jump up on the stage at some point in the show, the people feel like they're part of the band. And that's what P-Funk is. The people is part of the band. They look like it when we go there. If we don't watch it, all of them will be on stage. At any given moment.
But you see, you got the outfit on, so I don't know if we're all going to look alike today. Man, you outshining us today.
Well, we always try to keep it confusing, because ain't no sense in thinking you know us.
Well, you know, that brings me to another point. Chuck D, Public Enemy, says something to me one time, very interesting. He said, most records, when you listen to them today, you can only listen to them for a limited amount of time, and it you don't discover anything new. And he talked about yours and James Brown in particular. He said you listen to their music and you discover something new every time. He said some of it is because there's friction and there's competition among everybody and there's a lot of tension. And so the music always takes on new meaning every time you listen to it. But I wanted to ask, you know, because he also said sometimes these musicians, people like yourself, put messages in there that ain't supposed to be discovered until later on. So I wanted to ask you your thought.
What if I put something in there and it's a secret, I ain't supposed to be telling it.
So you're not going to tell us the deeper meaning. I'm trying to make you open up the code.
No, well, I probably couldn't remember the code as to when we did things, because we have done things, put things, said things, and, you know, that under certain conditions you would hear. But I wouldn't even know how to think about it. We did it so much in the 60s and 70s. When we was totally out of our mind, I wouldn't even remember what frame of mind or where I put the code.
Oh, man, George ain't going to let us in on it. Well, let me ask you about a couple of the landmark songs that we've always liked. Knee Deep, what was the meaning behind that?
Wow, that's really weird, because Knee Deep was a song I used to hum when I used to go fishing. And it was just rehearsal, you know, it was melodic rehearsal. But at the same time, I was trying to put part of it in 3/4 time, like, round and round the floor with that. And I love to get away with that freak and go back to that. And that's the reason I didn't think I could record it, because nobody would be dancing a waltz in the middle of something funky.
Right.
So Joni Morrison, who had just got with us from the Ohio Players, when they did Funky Worm, he just got with us. He said, "Yeah, man, it could be arranged." And he had me sing it, you know. You did Freak, never miss an upbeat. You did Freak, not just needy, she was no lady. And he had me sing it down. He came back with the track. He said, "Sing it just the way you always sing it." When I started singing it, everything that he had to fit it.
Right, right.
And from then on, it was just a matter of stacking voices. It's like 70 voices on that record.
Okay, that's what they also say. You're the master doing the stacking.
And so many stacks of different people on different days that was at the studio. You come in.
Wait, so some people would come in the other days and stack again?
That wasn't part of the continuities out the window. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's so big when, not just needy, she was totally needy. Because you got different days of the week when different people sing the same parts.
Wow.
And we just combined them, and it just got ever so much of P-Funk personality sound. We want the funk.
Right.
Sound like some can sing, some can't sing.
Right, right.
But it's the sound of the audience. It's the sound of, that's why that song still is around. You can't get away from that song.
Well, that's interesting. I remember Blackalicious, that's here in the Bay Area. They were talking about, yeah, they said that they learned a lot. They was talking about your stacking technique.
Yeah, I worked with them a couple of times, Blackalicious, yeah, yeah. So, and yeah, we learned that from Phil Spector.
I was going to ask, was it Phil? Did he learn from you, or you learned from him?
No, Phil Spector was the master on that when it was four tracks. Mm. He's the stack that is do-do-do-do. You remember that? That was so whatever, they, Two White Boys.
Right.
Yeah, they told that song. All these are the Rondettes.
Right, right.
Rondy, Rondy, Papa Tom. Like five sets of drums.
Wow, so that's the trick. Chocolate City. I've always loved that. When I came up, that was a song we were all proud of. It seemed like a major statement being said, even though it was obvious about Washington, D.C., but I mean, when you listen to it, I mean, everybody wanted to be Chocolate City. Talk about that.
It was, and Chocolate City was a cool version of what James Brown was doing, funky as hell. We just came back and made it kind of jazzy,
right,
almost like a radio station, and some cool James Brown, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Bootsy would come up with the rhythm. Bernie's the king of putting classical colorings around it,
right,
and jazz or classical. And then I just talked doo-doo. And it was like, of the day, it was same Black and I'm Proud. But it was, this time it was a little, it's the Chocolate City and it's Vanilla Suburbs.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it started stretching out the whole concept. And the music still is stretched out, because nobody still don't play that much like jazz and stuff on a synthesizer. Bernie can play the thing. It's not just the sound effect.
Right.
he can seriously play classical music. And then, of course, you had that Bootsy with his impeccable rhythms and his brother, Gary Scheider, and all the different people in the band right. that add different things. Or, you know, Glenn Gorns, when we were singing Swing Down Sweet Chariot.
Right, right.
That's like some of the highest you can get in that mood.
Right, right. You know, out of all the people you work with, and I mean, you work with a lot from the Bootsies to the Bernie Worrells and, you know, what have you. Is there anybody that you wish you could have done something with that you just didn't? I mean, if you had your choice right now, if you could bring them in the studio, who would you get down with?
Like I said, I ain't stopped. So I don't feel like I missed. I just haven't gotten to them yet. But I'm close to working with Rakim.
Rakim? You never did nothing with him, huh?
No. Nah, I mean, it samples, but he's bad. Eminem is bad. Knew him since he was 14 years old.
Watched, that's right, because of Detroit, right.
Yeah, watched him before he ever got a record out be good as he is. So my thing, I was trying to get him and Rakim, Eminem and Rakim, and Sly and myself.
Wow, what kind of song do you think it would be?
Well, we'd do the hook and the tracks, Sly, and then let them do their poetic damage. And then we'd give it to somebody to do them remixes and, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So they have a right combination of all of it.
Man, Rakim, Eminem. I mean, that would just be classic yeah. there, man.
And then you get some Sly Stone and P-Funk tracks.
Did you ever do anything with Michael Jackson? Did you all ever cross paths?
Yeah, we crossed paths, but we didn't do it directly. They did one of our songs called I Betcha.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we was always, we got nominated to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame same time.
Okay.
You know, I was around Motown when they first got there, you know, so we never got a chance to get right in the studio on something together.
Right. Motown didn't want to touch you or you didn't want to be with them?
I was with Motown twice. You know, but if you wasn't from Detroit, it was hard to get a song on somebody every now and then.
You know, I know that recently you've been doing a project, and you want to talk a little bit about that, you know, some of the stuff that you're doing currently?
Well, right now we're on the copyright issue. We're trying to change laws on the U.S. Copyright Office because
right.
there's ways people can steal your stuff, and you can't do anything about it just by going online, changing your ownership, transfer your music to themselves. That can be done, and it's been done to us to such a severe degree that you're going to start hearing a lot about lawsuits. They think they heard lawsuits before, but now it's coming up because we've gotten actually into the Congress with some of it.
Right.
You know, we got people that listen at us and check into it, and we got about 3 or 4 trials coming up.
You know, talk a little bit about that because that has been a problematic legacy for black musicians in particular. We have so many people who've bought their heart and soul and their guts and everything. And these are songs that, I mean, for me, I think they go beyond just you as the musician.
Yes.
These are songs that define us as a people.
We just put the mothership in the Smithsonian Institute.
Right.
So that's, the music means something.
Right.
It's not only Funkadelic, but it's all the people that sampled Funkadelic.
Right.
You know, Humpty Hump. That's a huge record. It's a Funkadelic song in the beginning, but it's a huge record for him. And the same thing happened to him that's happened to us. People have stolen the copyrights to his stuff when somebody else uses it.
Right.
People are getting paid for it. He don't.
Right.
My son don't, who wrote the song it was sampled from, Let's Play House.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And
so that money's not going back to you all.
No.
This is... Oh,
it's not,
wow.
It's not going to us at all. We're having the entire band, money is going basically to the same person who got mine. Okay, right now we're trying to put a class action lawsuit together for everybody in the band, not only us, but Sly Stone.
Right.
We're all right together, so we work together, we've done songs together.
It inspires us, you know, we take a riff and then we add something up. And that seems to be a natural way in which music is created.
That's the way they create music nowadays, that you can't get around it. That's the way they make music. So there ain't no thing saying it ain't good or bad. That's just a new thing to do. Right. And if you funky, to me it's a funky way to make music. You know, put two things together. We've done it before. Right. We used to listen to radio like that. When one station was fading out, another station was fading in, and you had to hear two songs at the same time. We're used to it. And but they make records like that. So I'm with that. You know, just you have to make some contracts and respect.
We got to add to the gumbo.
Yeah, you got to respect it. Because what you're doing is artsy-fartsy, too. Right. You know, you can. It's, your thing is real, right. Whether people want to believe it now or not. But once you get it perfected, it's going to be right straight to jazz or classical hip-hop.
Right.
You know, ain't no doubt about it. You're going to find some excellent musicians and artists, you know, like Bobby McFerrin, and be able to verbalize stuff, you know what I'm saying? You're going to find that it's going to elevate all the way to that. So do it right. Don't be gangster and try to hide the sample.
You'll find it. You're the master of the stack.
Well, somebody going to find it. They got musicologists now and machines that will find it. You got people that ain't got nothing to do with it finding it and suing you.
Yeah.
So I've been sued for somebody said they sued for me, then I have sued anybody.
Wow.
I've never sued any hip hopper. But I know that somebody took their money for the sample.
Wow. You know, when I hear this is disheartening. What can we do, people that are listening, people that are watching, what can we do to help make sure that somebody like you gets your just due and that music that you created that comes from our collective experience doesn't go in the hands of some corporation somewhere or some individual who ain't even part of where we from.
Go to our site, Funk Probosky, and you'll get that. And it has all these different cases and ways laws has to be changed from professors and everything. And all our lawsuits that we're in that answer these questions, any artist that's around now need to really educate himself on copyright. I mean, it's something to trade. If you trade, there ain't no shame in getting paid to trade it. But it do revert back to your family at some point.
Right.
So when you do those things, you don't have to believe that you done sold it forever.
Right.
And see, all that nobody knows. It's never been a reality. We just now testing, it's been a law, but we just now testing that law. And the record industry is busy trying to change it because a lot of stuff gets reverted back to the authors in 2013, One Nation being one of them. The record companies are fighting like hell all of a sudden to not have to honor that because they never did have to honor before. They could always skate around it and the publicity wouldn't be there. But now with the internet and all the talk, it's hard to hide anything.
Wow, so they're trying to change the laws as we go along.
They're really trying to change it. They've been disregarding it, but now they're actually trying to change it. They're fighting like hell to get people to change it. Because songs are like mortgages. You know how they had bundles of mortgages and getting loans from banks? They do the same thing with copyrights of regular R&B hip-hop song hits. Get one song, 2,000 other songs.
Right. Now, is there a difference between, you know, actually writing the song and, you know, coming up with the lyrics and melody versus what you actually put on vinyl? Are we talking about stuff that you actually recorded? That should be reverted back to you at some point as well, right?
The master, yeah, that the record that you have, the CD that you have, that will revert back to you at a certain point.
But they're trying to change that.
Yeah, that's a copyright. There's a copyright issue for the record and for the song, publishing-wise. The record itself belongs to the artist after a certain amount of time. Mm. And songs like One Nation, I done in 78, 2013, is the year it reverts back to me. But they're fighting like hell not to let that, or Knee Deep, revert back to me. But, you know, have actually went ahead of time into the copyright office and already changed the ownership. Have already done this.
So they changed the ownership so the clock starts all over again.
Yeah, change it. and the copyright place tell you, ain't nothing we can do. You have to take it to court.
Wow.
Even after court, they're saying we can't go back and make them pay from behind, but starting from now, you can get paid. We've introduced some laws to Congress that when somebody comes to change your copyright, they have to give you a call or email or something telling you somebody's trying to change it.
Is there any particular congressman or legislature that you're working with? I know like Orrin Hatch was pretty big on the thing. And
well, John Conyers.
Yeah, John was doing a lot of stuff with the jazz musicians.
He still is. He still is. And for all of the hip-hop stuff, Sheila Jackson Lee and Bobby Rush. All of them know about it, been talking with us. We've got instances for John Conyers on some jazz musicians where their stuff was taken. Because when you go up there, you can just look up anybody's history. But as soon as you find out about it and you see all this, what they've been doing, they said, well, we can't do nothing about it.
So Tribe Called Quest wasn't kidding when they said 4,080 record labels are shady. Shady, shady, man.
Oh, it's shady. They're out of business for that.
Well, you know, let's end on a high note, you know, and I'm glad that you shared with me. I'm mad. Now you got me all mad. I'm ready to go kick some doors.
No, don't do that.
Don't go Rambo.
You can't kill them but once. It ain't enough. Okay. But we're going to do something about it. You know what I'm saying? We putting all together, all this music on this Indiegogo outside. Right. We're getting our studio together with all these old tapes. And refurbishing these tapes, putting them out as stems and new media,
right?
All of that. So
you're gonna remaster?
We're gonna remaster and put them on new formats.
Okay, because I like the old doo-wop stuff. Yeah. A lot of us found them doo-wop records.
I got all of that stuff. Okay. I can remix and remaster the originals or whatever.
Let me ask you this, man. You know, before you do that, why don't you just give us, me. And my friends, a couple of copies, just exclusives. Let them figure it out themselves.
Believe me, we can do that with some of the fans that give to the Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. We give them mixes that we be on right then and there. That won't stay this way for another 20 minutes. Oh. But whatever they happen to call them on in a certain pocket, we just make a CD of it and send it to them. So the fans are getting all kind of silly surprises, and then Goodman.
So where do we got to go for this?
Indiegogo. That's the site online. Okay. George Lynch called Indiegogo.
You know, Brother George, is we get ready to let you get ready to go on the stage. What's the last, some parting words that you want to give to people? Let me start with this question. If I'm a young guy, I'm coming up, and I want to build on the legacy of the funk. And I want to add to it and take it to newer heights. What are some three essential things I got to do?
Well, I'm going to give you one long one. Okay. Say to yourself, I promise the funk, promise to keep its promise, you'll keep the funk.
Wait, repeat that again, just one more time.
I promise to funk, promise to keep its promise, you'll keep the funk. Say it one more time. I promise to funk, promise to keep its promise, you'll keep the funk.
There you go, man. That's something to end on. George Clinton, man. Remember, there's no hip-hop without this brother. There's no funk without him. It's a whole lot of music that just would not exist. Brother George, thank you so much, man.